beim Lichtbringer Podcast. So schön, dass du heute wieder dabei bist. Nimm einen tiefen Atemzug und entspann dich in die Energie. Und bevor es direkt losgeht mit der Folge, wie du vielleicht schon am Titel gesehen hast, ist die Folge heute auf Englisch. Es ist eine Premiere, die ich bewusst so veröffentliche in meiner deutschsprachigen Gemeinschaft der Lichtbringer. Ich habe eine Umfrage gemacht, tatsächlich im Lichtbringer-Universum. Das ist die Plattform, wo alle Lichtbringer-Projekte zusammenlaufen, wo es auch Live-Meditationen gibt, eine Karte, wo ihr euch regional vernetzen könnt, ich euch auf dem Laufenden halte über alles, was sich zeigt. Dort habe ich auch eine Umfrage gemacht, ob das Interesse da ist, auch englische Folgen zu veröffentlichen. Und das Interesse ist auf jeden Fall da. Und gleichzeitig ist auch der Wunsch da nach Übersetzung. Deshalb, falls du jemand bist oder jemand kennst, der das gerne noch übersetzt, entweder von Grund auf oder anhand von einem vorliegenden Transkript auf Englisch, dann schreib mich sehr, sehr gerne an unter team@lichtbringer.one. Und dann können wir schauen, welchen Ausgleich dafür du erhalten möchtest und wie wir hier uns finden können. Das würde richtig schön mir dienen und allen, die hier zuhören. Und in diesem Sinne, viel Freude mit dieser ersten Folge, die bereits aus meiner Sicht sehr tief geht. Fast eine Stunde mit Scott Schwenk. Wir sprechen über Verkörperung, über Schlüssel darüber, wie wir verkörpern können und alles, was damit zusammenhängt. Mir hat es sehr viel Freude gemacht und es steht auch im Raum, weitere solche Folgen mit dir zu teilen. In diesem Sinne, viel Freude und tauch gerne ein in die Energie hinter den Worten. Vielleicht, auch wenn du nicht jedes einzelne englische Wort verstehst. Welcome in this very special episode of the Sounds Funny in English Lightbringer podcast. My first English guest, actually, and I'm really, really pleased and honored to have this guest with us today, because not only it is a very profound and deep spiritual teacher who has not just talked about a lot of stuff, but actually embodied it, been practicing for decades over various different methodologies, studying very different aspects of spiritual and ego development, and being renowned breathwork teacher, having a program teaching the teacher, having many different other programs about tantras, mantras, yantras. He's very deep into into these topics, and his capacities even go beyond what I know he is capable of. But what I know of is that every time that I did talk to him and also saw him physically live, it was very inspiring. And we could talk about any given topic for hours and hours. So this is our first, I'd say, try, or almost like a game, to see what's coming through us when we share this space. Not only the two of us today, but also everybody who's listening to this, because they're already in the field and creating it with us. Thank you so much, Scott Schwenk, for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. That was a very beautiful description. I hope to live up to it.
I'm sure you do. So a lot of times we connected, and a lot of it was digitally and energetically, that we just connected and talked about what was on our hearts. It's kind of a emerging dialogue, like what wants to be said through us at this moment, being open to it, being open to it any moment. And this is a certain quality that maybe listeners can pick up on as well when listening to our words in the next minutes. And what just came up just a couple of minutes before we started and pressed the record button was about, actually connected to this, how the atmosphere of a person or the atmosphere of a room actually has something that already impacts different other persons and spaces, which kind of begins to transform energy. And I think, and I'm very curious about your perspective on that, that more and more people become aware of it, but there's still very few people who are energetically at the place that they already emit such a powerful field around them.
It feels like there's more there for you to say, but it's not a rush.
Yeah, I think where I'm aiming at is, first of all, what's your experience with this phenomenon that I just described? And then maybe as a lead-up question, what can we do to perceive what we're talking about here?
So I will start with the what can we do to perceive. As I see that, what I'll suggest from a lot of experience and helping others to practice this expands our capacity for perceiving about anything and helps us to do what we call so-called spiritual practices or ego work, or even be in beneficial experiences of therapy in some sort or body work, which is to practice deeply relaxing the entire body and relaxing into the entire body. I teach that in a way that I find very simple. Others may prefer another way. I call it the 6 points of softening, that when we imagine, and you can do this now as a listener, unless you're driving, then pull over. You can imagine if you had a fist that was really tight, if you were to open it, what that feeling feels like, but to do that activity of opening, softening with the imagination only, starting with the soles of the feet. So softening the soles of the feet, skin, tendons, connective tissue, muscles all the way to the bone, continuously. Do the same thing with the palms of the hands. Soles and palms continue to soften, doing the same thing with the four corners of the eyes, the inside and the outside corners of the eyes melting like butter on a hot day. Same with the region inside and around the ears, the tongue, and all the muscles of the pelvic floor groin region. Soles, palms, eyes, ears, tongue, pelvic floor groin region. Without trying to change the breath, what changes in the breath, the more the body softens. My body wants to take deeper breaths and slower breaths. And then from there, as I continue to soften the body, I can work with the breath. And I've learned through myself and my own practice and watching others practice that the longer and the slower we make the exhales, the more the thinking stream, the stream of thoughts, slows down, and we actually can start to notice more of the space between thoughts. And with practice, can begin to learn to hang out in that space between thoughts, where it's easier to perceive things that may have seemed subtle when we were tense, or subtle, or maybe even not even noticed when we were stuck in our thoughts. So from there, I think, you know, the answer to the question so far that comes through me about perceiving the atmosphere of oneself, another, or a room begins with preparing to be able to perceive with greater granularity, with greater subtlety, and to not have to describe to myself in words and thoughts what I'm perceiving, but to be able to sense things directly. Maybe I'm somebody who's oriented through perceiving through body sensations. So I get different sorts of body sensations when I'm sensing different types of atmospheres around a person or a place. Maybe I hear sound in a certain way. Maybe my visual field changes. But the more I relax the body, the easier it is for my capacities, the ones I know of and the ones I haven't yet maybe recognized or aren't yet as practiced, to foreground, to come online and become more and more available. The key is, I find, to let go of trying to figure it out with the mind. If I figure out with the mind, what I'm really doing is I'm digging around the past thoughts I've had to compare something I'm experiencing now. But if I'm experiencing something I've never noticed, then going to thoughts from my past to understand the present isn't going to show me anything accurate or useful. I'm going to be like looking through colored glasses, you know, looking through green lenses, wondering why everything looks green. So that's my starting point.
I love that there's some connection between relaxation and widening of our perception, which enables us to perceive actually more of what already is here. And that alone, I think when we master that skill alone, the same life you live will be experienced completely different.
Within a moment, really. I'm curious your perspective, your experience. I have a feeling it's somewhat similar, that when I stop trying to grasp at a different experience than the one I'm having, and I can just stop, soften, breathe, and accept what I am feeling, accept the energy state I am in, not accept my circumstances as such. Because my circumstances, I'm actually perceiving through a filter. They may not be what I think. To look at my energy state in the moment, and just stop and soften and stop fighting it, whether that's joy, sadness, elation, worry, grief, love, or a blend, which it usually is, without having to describe it. We're just accept this, knowing that the full acceptance doesn't mean I'm going to stay there forever, but actually is freeing me because I'm not resisting anything. For a different energetic to flow through my body, through my nervous system, and through my experience, and becoming a different atmosphere that all of life is interacting with, and differently because the energy has changed. So it can happen quickly is the whole point of that. It's like it can happen so quickly that the delay is the acceptance of my energy state as it is. And to understand why is this fear, whether we know it in a thought or not, if I accept it, I'll be stuck in it forever, which is actually the opposite.
Yeah, it's almost as if through relaxing and widening of our perspective, we see more of the parts of what actually is. And through that bigger picture, we oftentimes relax more because only one or two parts freaked us out.
Well,
so I think, and from my experience, when I had phases in my life where I did a lot of relaxation exercises and also through meditation came into a very relaxed state quicker and quicker, at some point, I was so relaxed already going into the meditation that it felt unnecessary to do the meditation. And when I got out of it, it was just a game of, let's see when I tense up again and why. Hmm. Kind of like keeping your heart open and noticing when it is closing again and seeing through the dynamics, why this is happening within me. In opposing to trying to resist it or trying to dodge it, just observing what's happening. And funny enough, after that period in my life, which felt very empowering, I was tensing up more and more because of stuff I couldn't control. At least it seemed to me that I couldn't control it. And that longing to be in that state again of relaxation, of accepting with what is, with flowing with the energy that already is here, was almost like a seed was inside me from that point on. And to be honest, it was there for many years. And only now I'm beginning more and more again to be able to maintain a level of relaxation in different situations. And without making this process a goal, it's only good when I can stay relaxed, because that's another dynamic the mind comes up with pretty quickly.
Yeah. And then it starts grasping at relaxation without realizing it's creating tension.
It's so funny, our mind, isn't it?
You know, one thing I want to touch on before we pass it too far, which is what you said about, I'm doing these meditations and then I'm already relaxed when I exit the meditation and I'm watching to see when and how and why I tense up. There's another perspective, which is, it may not be new tension that I'm experiencing after the meditation, but my awareness has softened and opened to be able to notice how I've been behaving for a long time that maybe other people have seen and had to deal with, but I was clueless about the degree to which I was carrying subtle and concrete tension and projecting blame onto circumstances and other people's as the cause. Rather than, oh, wait, this is my mechanism for attention. And the way I'm using the attentional mechanism is shaping how much or how little I can perceive of the moment and the atmosphere and this person or people that I'm thinking of or am physically with.
Totally. For me, that ties into this receptivity that increases through the relaxations. So it's more early that you recognize when something is tensing up and in which atmosphere that you're at. Because I did look at myself in the atmosphere of train station, in the atmosphere next to this person, the atmosphere in an airplane, on a toilet. Like every situation I was in, I was like, how is this affecting me? Can I stay relaxed? What is tensing up? And and I think when we open up, and I think this can also apply to perception in general, we become aware of everything we were not aware of beforehand. And that can be overwhelming. Like opening up to new information and to new streams of information that we've never perceived is like, whoa, has this been there the whole time? And actually from that point on, when I guide meditations, I wasn't saying try to relax more deeply and let go of your tension. I was more like, find the tension spots in your body and be with it and watch how it dissolves. Like, the fact that you become aware of it and be with it enables it to let go, because you realize it's unnecessary to hold on to it. It's a very subtle change, but for me, it was a big difference.
Yeah, I can relate to this. And the practicing consistently, having some formal practice, formal meaning like a time I set aside each day, or more than one time each day, where I'm committedly doing this practice, the more consistent that is, then it's easier to access the practice and to be practicing in some degree throughout the entire day in the ordinary moments, so that when there are the inevitable challenges, it's easier to access. I mentioned before we started this podcast that last week I was confronted with based on a car accident I've had, discovering that the auto repair place, the collision center, was engaging in what appears to be fraud to the tune of thousands of US dollars, billing the insurance company for things they turned out they did not do. And I'm standing in the service center of the dealer where I'm finding this out, who's thankfully helping me to fix things. And like the way things lined up, because I kept choosing to practice relaxing, not knowing, and believing that some coherent force is available if I can just relax and become available and pay attention to what's happening. So I go to a chiropractor literally next door to this BMW dealership twice a week. And I was leaving the chiropractor on Friday and something just had me, just nudged me to go in there and see my service advisor. The collision center had brought my car back. They had done a fix, supposedly, of one of the very important and very expensive things they did not do that was causing a problem with the electronics and bleeding the battery. My service advisor happened to be there. And then we were chit-chatting about different things. He was showing me the invoice and he was basically sharing his distrust in this collision center based on a number of factors. Just so happened that the collision center that the BMW dealership partners with, the manager of that collision center happened to be in the building. And so he comes over, thanks to my service guy, asking him to just have a friendly look at my car. And he finds three other things that were not done that were billed for. With just a small look. Example is every car has what's called a VIN number. It's a very long series of numbers. And some of the parts in a car have that number on it. Well, there's this part inside the hood of the car, this metal big panel that was claimed to be replaced. And he's like, they didn't replace it. And here's how you know, your VIN number is still stamped right on it. It's like right there, just obvious. So throughout this whole process, like it was like not something I'm not used to dealing with this level of deception, not even close in my life. So I had to keep breathing and softening, going, okay, this is information. I don't need to react. This is information. I will feel whatever I feel, but let me continue to stay open and curious so that I can actually be guided to ask the right questions. And, you know, touch wood or knock wood, however you say it in your country, things seem to be playing out, like working out at a whatever the pace is. Next step is to know that the collision center that did the faulty work returns all the money back to the insurance company so that this other collision center can do the work properly. So I'm just waiting this week, a little nervous. Are they really going to do what they said they were going to do? They're worried that I will open a complaint with this particular body of automotive repair bar, which could be take them out of business. But still, there's the not knowing, there's the unknown. There's a big unknown, and there's the desire for certainty. There's the desire for a car I actually enjoy and is easy to drive. The rental car is loud and uncomfortable. But the practice is the same, to keep coming back to softening, listening, and touching something that's more coherent and more organized than my worry, my ego structure. But I only access it the more I relax. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, thank you for this tangible example, how it plays out in everyday life. And to me, what also came to mind is, for me, even in sports, relaxation can lead to high performance. Because I once met a guy and he claimed that high performance is more accessible in the deepest relaxation. And I was like, okay, this might apply in everyday life, but not in sports, right? Because you need to tense your muscles. You need to like kick a ball, whatever you do. And then I met another guy who became very quickly, very successful in paddle tennis. I think that's how it translates. It's a mix between tennis and table tennis. He, within a very short period of time, was able to play for the national team of Germany. And beforehand, he was a tennis teacher at a very famous club. And the better the players became that he was teaching, he told them more often that they need to hit the racket, the ball with the racket, more relaxed to have better shots. And I was like, that's interesting. So I've been trying and experimenting myself, even in sports. And some know that I have also a world record in stacking plastic cups on top of each other. And even in that, when I'm in a relaxed state and my hands can still be quick, but I move from an inner place of silence, from an inner place of centeredness, that my movements are a lot more precise, my hands shake less, and so on. So I just extend that to even the area of sports or jogging, for example. When I kind of jogged a lot a couple of years ago, then I stopped, and now I started again. And I did, like, with my awareness, I was my whole body during jogging, and I became more aware of the blocks, for example, in my stomach that I have from chronic muscular tension, that are not that obvious when I just sit for meditation for an hour. It's a lot more obvious when I run and I relax during running.
Okay, I have, like, to jump in here because I haven't told more than maybe. Well, no, I told my membership community in a live session last week about this very same thing, but differently. I do about 10 minutes or so, depending on the day, on the treadmill at an incline at the gym before I work out. And for a couple of months now, more intensively, I've been practicing this thing that sounds like what you're talking about, where I trust myself on the treadmill because there are these rails I can hold if I need to or bump into. So I'm not going to really fall off if I'm present enough. How deeply and profoundly can I let go throughout my whole body and let consciousness move the body? And so what I'm doing once I get that going is I'm paying attention exactly what you said. Where is there tension? There's, like, I'm noticing in the abdomen, particularly in the psoas, and, like, relaxing, particularly on the right psoas. Like, how much can I let go? And then notice how that wraps around the back, that runs down the hamstring, and how it affects the calf. And so this simple practice for me is utterly transformative, because there are moments when there'll be a motion that starts to move as a certain area relaxes. Like, as ordinary as it is to anybody who's watching me, for me, there are moments where it's a profound healing practice that's more than just working with the physical body. And so it's really wonderful and not surprising to hear you share something similar.
Yeah. And to really think about what we just shared, like, that practice can be stretched to, like, every moment of the day. Stretched is, I think, the right word for it.
Yeah. No, I just, because the analogy, you know, double entendre.
And it also came to my mind that, like, fascia rolling, like black rolling. I've done it for over 10 years, like almost every night before I go to sleep. And there was a phase where my body felt so relaxed again that I noticed the difference. And I think the more you open in your tissues, again, the more subtlety you perceive, and the more you also perceive, and that's where it connects to the emotional structure for me, then you perceive that when you're tense, you're not that flexible in your emotional reaction. It's almost like you're fixed on, I want to defend myself now, instead of, let's look at the other perspective as well. And I mean, that's fascinating for me, and I don't hear anybody talk about it in that way, that even when your tissues are softened out, relaxed, you have a more flexible way of interacting. How's your experience with that?
I would agree. And I have actually encountered people over the years who've written and talked about this in their own ways. Marian Rosen of the Rosen Method, German woman, who's no longer in a body, but taught a body of work that people are still doing around the world, that talks very much about this. Certainly Alexander work that many of us who have trained as actors or dancers, our performers in some way, have been exposed to. You know, they'll literally have you do the task of opening a door handle over and over again. Nope, that's not it. Do it again. Nope, that's not it. Do it again. Or the same application to getting up from a chair. Until the coach, the Alexander coach, sees you only using the tissues and the structures that are necessary for the action and nothing else. So I 100% agree with this. Otherwise, we're being organized by past trauma and tension and projecting it onto the future. Why else would I need to be tense in some experience that I've not yet had? Some way, unconsciously or subconsciously, or maybe even a little consciously, I'm projecting this worry that something I didn't like that happened in the past is going to happen in this circumstance or soon, and I need to be bracing myself physically to be prepared, which is actually the opposite of prepare. I'm not as ready if I'm tense. I can only move in certain ways that the tension allows and not in other ways. Mm-hmm. And see and perceive and like this. It's so counterintuitive. I mean, I understand for anybody who's nervous hearing this, like, well, if I just deeply relax, will I get anything done? Like, my stress is what makes sure that I feed my children and, you know, get my work done on time. It seems like that. And it seems confronting. I have a lot of compassion for anybody who feels that way. Like, will my life get done if I'm not pushing or forcing or stressing? Will I remember everything?
Well, I'm curious about your experience with this, because what I've experienced is that the more I'm in that state creating stuff, the more I'm creating of experiences, more experience that I need to push and grind and hustle and tense up to get it all done. And the more I relax, like in the morning, and suddenly my perspective widens and I'm like, that's the fundamental task as of now. And I do it fully. And then I check in again. What's the task now? I get done a lot more, or let's say more effective, without burning myself out, because I have the experience of two, not that severe burnouts, but states where I had months and months to recover from, because I did the other part quite often. And it's very counterintuitive. Yes, I feel that a lot.
And it can come up. It has definitely come up for me that I tend to do a lot of my stronger practices in the morning as well before the events of the day. And it's very close to the time of having gotten out of the bed, which for me is one of my most relaxing places, my bed. So it's like some days, you know, don't want to get out of it. It's so cozy when it's cold outside and we've been blessed to have a little bit of rain here and the sound is so soothing, right? So I'm sitting in my practice and I may notice as I deepen into the practice, and I know what's on the calendar, like, I just want to stay in practice. I just want to stay here. This is so nice. Well, I may be starting to notice or uncover or excavate things like chronic fatigue. And I don't mean it like a disease that's diagnosed by a doctor, but like, I may have had a lifestyle for long enough of pushing myself that there's a buildup of fatigue that needs to be addressed. And I may not be in a position as a parent or a single parent who works and this and that to go on holiday for 6 months or go to, you know, some Ayurvedic or some sort of cleansing thing for a month or two. And it may be very expensive. So what do I do? Well, as scary as it might be to my past and the way I was raised, can I just close my eyes for 10 minutes in the afternoon at some point or later in the day? And there's so much data to show how much more effective we can be at just beginning to insert intentional rest, even if we don't fall asleep. So the point is this, as we relax and engage this practice, it doesn't mean everything's going to suddenly be easy and just money's going to flow all of a sudden and milk and honey are going to flow through the tap and everyone's going to love us. We actually may discover more things that need attending to. Like, imagine inheriting a house. Somebody dies and they leave you a house. You've never been to the house or haven't been there in many, many decades. And the electricity's not turned on for the house. It's not been occupied for some time. And we're going to get it ready to sell, but we know it needs to be clean. Well, how can we clean if we don't have lighting to see where the dirt is? So we could say that the relaxation is a form of illumination or lighting that we may see where we're holding even more tension or fatigue or emotional distress that needs the support of a mentor, a therapist, a coach. And then, okay, when I see it, it doesn't mean that my only options are the ones that are most expensive to my time and my money. What can I do with what I have? What do I have and what can I do in the small moments? And then show up for it. Do it consistently. Like a simple little thing is, in between meetings, can I maybe just close my eyes, elongate my spine, and do some spinal breathing or just some slow, steady breathing and relax the 6 points? And what happens after 30 days of that consistently in between my meetings for a minute at a time or something like that? Oh, wow. Or hydrating. Like maybe I discover I'm chronically dehydrated. Well, we know that guzzling water is just going to pass through my intestines. It's not going to hydrate me. So, okay, I have an alarm or something, a note on my desk, and it says, sip, take a sip. Every 20 minutes, I take a couple sips of water. And I notice after 30 days, oh, wow, I'm waking up more rested. Oh, my body seems to be functioning with more ease.
I love how we're talking so much about the basics, but I think mastering the basics is an art that can go on for a lifetime, a challenge. And some point, something ties into this, which I think is very fundamental to look at as well, is like we humans tend to only accept things when they're complex enough, but can we open ourselves up to simplicity again? Like, not like, oh, I know this already, I've tried this already, it worked kinda, but, or it didn't work because I did it for 2 days. And this is a trend I see in the spiritual community that I'm a little worried about. And you're an example of a person that I see that is very, very consistent with a depth of practice that I just feel when talking to you. I feel the depth the conversation can go into and I can relax myself into, that is not available when I'm with people that don't have that consistency in some way. And now, and that's one last point here, the same discipline that can keep us in a constant practice can also brings us the fatigue.
Yes.
When we use the discipline as something that we go against what our feeling, our inner feeling is right now. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I would invite us all, including the listener, this is part of what I would do, take a couple of deep, slow breaths through the whole body. And as the exhale is happening, let go through every cell with the imagination, like one is setting down a heavy suitcase, a heavy burden, you know, what that feeling feels like to set down a heavy bag or a heavy suitcase or backpack. And just, because when I encounter the moment of confusion, I now know that the first thing I need to do is to meet my nervous system and my body with breath and relaxation. If I want any information that's useful. So prior to the moment of the breath and the softening, I have created, whether I know it or not, an atmosphere that we've been talking about, an atmosphere. And I'm experiencing the atmosphere. I may say I'm experiencing what somebody said or did or didn't say or didn't do or circumstance, but I'm really only experiencing the atmosphere I'm perceiving that through. So as I breathe more deeply and softly, slow my exhales and let go as though I'm setting down a heavy burden, I shift my nervous system, I shift the senses' capacity to perceive more and to get guidance that's not dependent on thoughts about or from my past. But it also does not neglect any information from the past that could be helpful, useful and beneficial.
Is it that simple that, and I know that breath is so fundamental, and I know that if through breath techniques, you have guided thousands and ten thousands of people into states of more receptivity and transformation on different levels. Would you say that it is the key to become aware of this atmosphere that one has already created, consciously or unconsciously, to, as you just said, meet your nervous system at a level that you can even begin to soften?
I'm reluctant to say anything, even if I thought it was the key, is the key, so that people don't become fundamentalists, you know, like this is the only way. We've heard enough of that throughout the centuries, like this way is the only way. It's not the only way. There are multiple ways that lead to different outcomes. There are different forms of awakening. The Sufis awaken to the end of awakening is everything is love. The Zen Buddhists, they awaken to no self and emptiness. They're seemingly different realizations. And so many others. So there are multiple realizations available. It seems like from experience from myself and others that how we're breathing is affecting profoundly how we're experiencing the moment and what we can perceive in a moment. And then the relative tension or ease that we intentionally bring through the body magnifies that more. So it seems so. There may be something that comes along that I don't know about, but any practice I'm seeing, you know, we are in bodies. If you're listening to this, you're in a body most likely. Otherwise, I'm not sure how you're listening to it. And if you're not in a body, you're probably not so, I'm guessing, not so interested in the narrow dimensionality of fourth dimensional earth consciousness. You probably got way more interesting things going on and way more access. So we're in a body. Taking good care of the body makes a difference because it's our perceiving mechanism, and it's also the distribution mechanism for source to give its gifts into life.
That last sentence opened something. And something I want to touch on as well is, as you said, that there are different realizations available, and it almost seems like relaxations, widening of our perception, can allow more of those different realizations to be valid at the same time while seemingly being paradoxical.
That's right.
And for the mind, that's very hard. Because he wants to understand and want to have one truth, right? And that's what I love.
Well, let's be more clear. The mind wants safety and security and believes that certainty about something will give safety and security. So the mind looks to pin something down. It is this way and it's only this way. And then I can feel safe and secure. But the reality is we don't usually feel safe and secure with those kinds of certainties. Something in us knows. Something somehow knows, there's probably something I don't know, the knowing of which could change everything.
Do you have everyday examples or examples with your students about exactly this point? Where you see that people again and again seek security in some point of view, some sort of practice, whatever it is.
This is a really intense example. There are other ones that are gentler or not so difficult to swallow. So there's a woman I know who she has two small children and a husband and lives in Los Angeles and lived in an area called the Palisades up until a couple of months ago or until about a month ago. And several months ago, she had found out she was pregnant with a third child. And at first she was like, I don't know how I'm going to manage this. This is a lot. I mean, I like the idea, but I don't know if it's a good moment. And then she wrapped her head around it, was so excited, and she had a miscarriage. And it was devastating to her and to her husband for a long time. Then came the Los Angeles fires, the Palisades fire, and their house and their children's school burned down, among other things. Everything they owned. They left with a bag of clothes, a couple changes for the kids, and I think the clothes on their backs for themselves. She didn't say this, and I haven't, out of sensitivity, wanted to engage her this way, but like, I remember thinking about this whole thing and her pregnancy and going, I felt grateful on her behalf that she wasn't pregnant while dealing with the fires and the fleeing and all the stress of that, that that baby didn't have to go through that. So maybe this baby comes back in another time when there's more ease. And since this time, in her coming to acceptance of the of her energy and things are the way they are, the community rallied around them so quickly. People donated money. They got a place to stay. All these clothes were given, like furniture. I mean, just all the things. And she's been saying things like, it seems like her life is even better than it was before.
That is an intense example, but it really moves something within me and also makes it even clearer that the tension that's been created from one perspective. And I always ask myself and the people I'm leading, or I'm giving courses for, is how much is there that I'm not perceiving right now that is happening also for me? And just relaxing into that question and into that perspective is like, maybe I do not need to know everything. Maybe it's even better that I don't know everything, how it's organized in such a complexity that no mind can comprehend it. What is happening outside of my perception that's arranging things for me? And I think your example.
What energy state can I train in or practice that, regardless of what circumstances I find myself in, that energy state is conducive and beneficial to more than just myself? So for me, I come back again and again to different states of love, compassion, that has to include my own body, my own emotions, but not limit to that. Can I be cultivating that? Otherwise, if I don't have a particular or several particular energy states, or we could say emotional states, love, gratefulness, contentment. There's an endless list of choices that are similar to one another. If I don't have this, then I'm actually believing that my circumstances are what make me feel love or joy or contentment or gratefulness. So I'm going to constantly be trying to manipulate the outer world and other people based on my past, not even based on what might really actually bring the joy, love, and contentment. I'm manipulating, so I'm in a space of tension and hustle for the rest of my life. And then that's the illusion that my personal small me is the doer that that makes everything happen in the universe, and is so not true. You think you're the doer, go be in a land where it has a lot of earthquakes. And see if you can stop the earthquake with your will. Good luck. But I can come into harmony with energetics to more of a degree where it's more likely I get an intuition to leave the building or to go to the place that is more safe, maybe I don't know why, before the earthquake, for example. But if I've got set ideas about my abundance, my relation, like how it has to look and feel, again, based on the past, I'm limiting being in harmony with the guidance that's always available all day long. for all of existence. And I'm not claiming to be an expert at this, by the way. I'm practicing day in and day out.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. I think sort of rounds up part of our talk as well, since you just added that the emotional state and the state you're in affects a lot if you're even able to go into that perspective of what's even happening for me that I cannot perceive of now. And we've started talking about transformation and about the atmosphere that's being created from one person, from a situation, and what relaxation opens up in that. Perceiving what is being arranged, how it is being arranged, with the bridge to what we just talked about now. And I loved flowing with you again today, Scott. And I hope everyone who listened did as well. Is there something at the end of our conversations that you want to add now?
Believe in love. Practice relaxing without judging how it's going, but do pay attention. And this has definitely been my experience continuously over the decades, and I know it has been Jan's as well, that spending time with people who we do feel that sense of greater ease and awareness, even if it's confronting or challenging sometimes, because we need to be challenged and confronted, that spending time with others who are somewhere seemingly further down the road in some area. You know, if you want to grow your tennis game, you don't go play people that are way worse than you. You play people that are better than you so that you can download through the nervous system more of their awareness and skill set. So the same applies here. And when we can be relaxed and quiet, we can sense, is this the right moment for me to go to that workshop or spend time with that mentor? And keep paying attention. Where it gets challenging is when we get confronted about our own delusions, ignorance, and illusions. Our ego can fight to be right and to maintain the tension without us realizing it. So that's when we really need to grow these skill sets so that we don't keep teacher hopping because we don't like being confronted. So really great coaching, really great teaching is a balance of challenge and support. And if we're not practicing exploring that balance within ourselves, how we talk to and work with ourselves, then it's going to be awkward at best when we start with a mentor or a teacher. But we need teachers. We need good, strong teachers and mentors and community. There are realizations that we will have that aren't necessarily common as we get further down the road. And if there's no one to reflect it back to us that it's an accurate realization, we may think we're gone a little cuckoo. We may think something's wrong. We may not even notice we've had the realization and then not be able to yet cultivate it into a deeper embodiment. And the last thing I'll say is it's not about us as individuals. It's a myth and an illusion that we are individuals that are separate from one another. We are one continuous energy flow with different flavors. And when we come into collaboration as opposed to competition, everything changes.
Thank you, Scott, for adding these two very fundamental insights. And if somebody's listening and feeling that Scott has these qualities, confronting and supporting, and his wisdom has just touched you and his atmosphere has also touched you, then feel free to look up in the show notes all the links that I've put to dive deeper into Scott's work and what he's bringing into this world, into this life. A lot of light. Thank you so much, Scott, for having you here and looking forward to maybe more talks. I'm curious.
Yes, me too.
I'm curious to hear also the resonance of everybody listening, so we also know that it doesn't just resonate with us, but also with you. Thank you so much for listening, for being part of this. See you here next time.
Thank you, Jan.
So schön, dass du zugehört hast. Und ich freue mich riesig über jedes Feedback. Ich freue mich riesig zu hören, ob du es verstehen konntest. Und hier nochmal die Erinnerung, falls du Übersetzer, Übersetzerin bist oder jemand kennst, dann schreibe mich sehr gerne an unter team@lichtbringer.one. Ich freue mich und in diesem Sinne bis zur nächsten Begegnung.